past week, a former student of mine, very bright, she just turned 50, came to me in real distress. And one of the sources of her distress was a book she had been given to read, The Four Last Things, Heaven, Hell, Judgment, Death, Judgment, Heaven, and Hell. It was written in 1899, and she asked me to vet it for her. It was ghastly. It was total trash. Because the author insisted, and it was just re-edited and reissued a few years ago by another priest. He said, well, our job in the world is to save our souls and escape hell. Wow. The reason that I thought about this is this reading from Paul sounds like the kind of ghastly sort of religiosity that I was brought up with, namely we're all supposed to be otherworldly. You may remember that phrase. Otherworldly. You just kind of blind yourself to everything going on here and just keep your eyes fixed on heaven. Well, that's nonsense. And that's certainly not what Paul had in mind here, where he said, well, I don't want you to think about anything and just think of the afterlife. No. As I said the past couple of weeks, Paul was not anti-sexist, so much of the church teaching, official church teaching is. And certainly not anti-world. He was saying all this stuff because he believed that God was going to send Jesus back momentarily. Paul probably was killed in around 67. And at that time, even this eschatological hope was still very fervent in the church. This Jesus movement, it wasn't called the church at that time. And so that's what he's thinking about. Don't be distracted, folks. Don't be sucked up into all kinds of mundane stuff where you lose sight of what we're supposed to be doing, namely building the kingdom of God here. So we have to be, because this fits so neatly into that wretched pattern that book suggested. Oh, I don't want you to think about anything. I just think about heaven. No. That's not what Paul is talking about. And I can't imagine he said this without either his fingers crossed or a grin on his face when he said, well, the unmarried man is just worried about the things to come. Well, come on, folks. It doesn't work that way. And the unmarried woman, you know, they're all single-mindedly looking forward to the eschaton. Now, I think he was probably laughing when he wrote that. Okay, this business of Jesus and this unclean spirit, I don't know what all this exorcism stuff is about, frankly. Except I do know that what the people were talking about when they talk about Jesus exorcising somebody, maybe paranoid schizophrenic or bipolar or something, we don't know. He was doing what Jesus did all the time when he cured people, namely restored them to the community. If people were thought to be demented or possessed, however they read it in those days, they were clearly outside the scope of the human family. So whenever Jesus cured anybody, whether of leprosy or, in this case, whatever it was, that's what he was about. And it's this that is contained in this notion of Jesus teaching with authority. It is very important that we don't misunderstand this, too, because we have so frequently. What does it mean to be authoritative? Well, I know I have a bunch of bosses. I have a boss at Brescia. I have a boss at King's. I have a boss at the TD Canada Trust. I have a boss in, you know, Ottawa. I have bosses all over the bloody place. But that's not what Jesus' notion of authority is. We have to go back to the original meaning of the word algere, the Latin verb from which we get the word authority, to understand Jesus' pattern of behavior. To be authoritative is to help to grow. That's what authority means. To help to grow. Not simply to call the shots for somebody else's life. And this is really important because what has happened in our normal understanding of authority is that authority is always something alien and alienating. to us. Something that doesn't deepen or restore me to myself, but in a sense distracts me from myself, pulls me away from who I am. So what was going on is that these people saw in the pattern of Jesus' behavior and what he said, this glorious moment of self-recognition. So that's what it's all about. Because the people heard these words and say, and they illumined their own deepest places in their lives. And we've all had moments like that, I think, either reading Shakespeare or the Bible or meeting people who act as authorities in our lives. They are enlivening. They're not the bosses. They're not something that take me away from myself, but which restore me to myself. And nobody can recognize that for me. And this is really important. And this is, again, that pivotal point where the notion of authority as being boss, and the notion of authority as causing me to grow. That's where that great divide stands. And that's why it's so important to understand what it means to be authoritative. These people saw in Jesus, who was a hillbilly, layman, you know. But they saw his clear-sightedness, his vision of the possibility of human life that was not present for people living under the Roman Imperium or all the religious authorities. Because if you stand back from Jesus, in the normal reading, Jesus was not particularly religious. In the normal reading, the Pharisaic kind of religion, the priestly kind of religion, Jesus played fast and loose with all that stuff. The Sabbath was made for human beings, not human beings for the Sabbath. One of the most wonderful statements, because the Sabbath was one of the three great pillars of Jewish religiosity. That's why Jesus was able to restore the primitive Jewish vision that God calls us to life. To be alive with each other and for each other, because that's the only life that's real. And that's what is meant by saying that Jesus is authoritative.